Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas,
the prairie sky is wide and high.
Get out of the wrong
deep
station.
In the heart of Texas.
The reason I am playing this is because Texas has come to my aid. It's amazing to me that here I live in California and I had to go to Texas to find a congressman to represent my interests. And I got to tell you that John Culberson is my hero. He is a congressman from Texas, a very brave man who has sent a letter to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on my behalf that you really have to read. I'm not going to read it to you. It's on michaelsavage.com. It's unbelievable to you to read this thing. I mean, maybe I'll read it later. But, you know, I got to say this. First of all, many of you are under the false impression that I have been taken off the banned list. I'm not. I'm still on the list with murderers. I still can't go to England. I want to tell you right now, it's been eating me alive because I don't belong on a list with bad people. I'm a good person, and I belong on a list with heroes, not villains. So, anyway, John Culberson, member of Congress, intervened on my behalf, and he wrote a letter to Hillary Clinton, you know, urging her to use all diplomatic tools at her disposal to press the United Kingdom to remove Michael Savage from the list of individuals banned from the United Kingdom and to ask the British government to grant them a travel visa as soon as possible. You see, he said this. Dr. Savage's rare plant specimens have been archived at Kew Gardens since 1969. They are a world-class collection of rare medicinal plant specimens from Fiji and Tonga. Dr. Savage needs to visit London for his scientific research, but he is unable to do so because of the Home Secretary's travel ban. I strongly urge you to press the British government to lift these restrictions on him immediately. Now, look, I didn't write this. Congressman Culberson did. And I want to read you a few other lines. Savage speaks for most Americans when he criticizes people who apologize for our success and who will not protect our borders, our common language, and our American culture. If Savage were at the fringe of society like the other people on the UK list, he would not have a nationally syndicated radio show and he would not be the third most popular talk show host in America. I listen to Dr. Savage's radio show regularly, and I've never heard him encourage hatred or incite anyone to engage in violence. Now, here's the last paragraph. The travel ban against Savage demeans and diminishes Great Britain as a free and open society, he writes. The United Kingdom should immediately remove Dr. Savage's name from this list of criminals and terrorists, lift his travel ban, and grant him a visa to travel to Great Britain whenever he wishes. In the weeks ahead, here it comes, I will be working with my colleagues in Congress to help protect Dr. Savage's First Amendment rights and his ability to travel freely to Great Britain. I urge you to press our British friends to remove him from the Home Secretary's list of banned individuals. Thank you for your prompt attention to this important matter. John Culberson, a member of Congress, and it was written to Secretary Hillary Clinton in the Department of State. We'll have to wait and see if Hillary Clinton can override her bias against my politics and represent me as an American citizen. But it's really a great day for me, truthfully, because at last I am not alone. Now, I've not been alone in terms of you. Thousands of you have contributed to my legal defense fund. I want to thank you. And more than thousands of you have cheered me on. But the fact of the matter is, I am still not allowed to enter Britain. Bill O'Reilly won't cover it. Sean Wallbanger won't cover it. Glenn Hemorrhoid won't cover it. They won't touch this important story because you know the reasons why. There's no reason for you to fill in the blanks. It's kind of sad when you think they present themselves as a conservative alternative to liberalism, and yet here I am banned in Britain, and they won't touch the story. How can they call themselves a network that is fair and balanced when they'll cover hookers, murderers, terrorists, but they won't cover a member of the American media banned from a Western nation. Shame on all of them. This story, banned in Britain, is one for the record books. If you want to talk about it, you can. If you're bored of it, I understand. It's a great day for me. It's a little hard for me to celebrate completely because I have a smashing hangover in that I made a big mistake. I normally only, when I want to really drink, I drink vodka and a little beer. Last night, I drank an awful lot of single malt scotch because I felt a sore throat coming on. It was an excuse. It was a cold night. I sat on the back of the boat with a friend, and I drank for a long period of time, and I drank too much, and I got a smashing hangover, so you'll have to forgive me. Nevertheless, that's life. I admit it to you. I shouldn't be banned from Britain, but Britain should be banned from me. I'd like them to stop exporting scotch, is what I like. You know, I'd like them to stop sending it to this country so I stop buying it because it leaves me with a smasheroo. 1-800-449-8255. This is Michael Savage, banned to balance the list of banned Muslims as a sacrificial lamb for the cowardly socialist government. There's another reason I drank a lot last night, is because I've been watching a series on the History Channel of World War II in color, and I got to tell you, I'm both captivated and sickened by what I watch. I watched this footage. It's hours and hours and hours of the men who died so that I could be on the radio and you could listen to me freely. And I see boys just like the boys next door. I see guys just like the guys of today. And it's amazing to me as I watch it and see the carnage, the slaughter, the bloated bodies floating in the water, whether it be in the attempt to take back Tarawa from the Japanese. You see guys, good-looking young men, some of them with baby faces. Then they hold nothing back in this footage. I mean, they got this from people's home movie collections. Nurses over there doing God's work, trying to save lives. And one of the nurses, I mean, they quote one of the nurses who says, "I sit and hold a young man's hand. He looks up and he says, 'How am I?' And I tell him he's okay." She said, "I watched them put a needle in his arm with the morphine going in. He looks at me and he says, 'I just wanted to know.' And she said, 'Then he died.'" It's unbelievable. Then she said, "We cry a lot." She said, "But never in front of the boys. Never in front of the boys. We cry a lot, but never in front of the boys." And you watch this and you see that men died, 3,000 in one day, U.S. Marines, abandoned on a beach in Tarawa because the guys behind the taking of Tarawa miscalculated the tide. I mean, as a boater, I got to tell you, the first thing you try to figure out is the depth of water proportionate to the bottom of your boat. Well, can you imagine the mistakes that were made, that they sent boats in that needed 4 feet of water and they only had 3 feet, and the boats got hung up on the fringing reef of this island, and then boats were picked off by Japanese mortar fire. The men were then basically pushed out of the landing craft, and they had to wade ashore in 3 feet of water, 700 yards from shore, as though they were ducks sitting in a barrel being shot at by the Japanese. And you just see the slaughter, and you can't understand this. You just can't understand any of this. And it boggles your mind to think about what they died for. When you see the kind of garbage that we have in the media today, when you see the kind of filth coming out of Hollywood, I could go on and on and on. When you see the kind of communist, socialist, anarchist dreck in the Democrat Congress, you have to ask yourself what these men died for. Would they have fought for this country if they knew that Bonnie Frank and Nancy Pelosi would have taken over this country, hijacked it? Would they have died? Would they have died in World War II? I ask myself, if they knew this interloper, Obama, who has turned America into a doormat, would have become president one day? I don't think so. No, I don't think they died so that the interloper could turn America into a doormat and apologize in particular to this fellow in Japan. In fact, no one in the West has ever bowed to him before in terms of leadership. Never. They usually shake his hand, and Obama bows from the waist, literally in an obeisance, bowing, almost touching the floor, as if to say, "I am ashamed to be before you, Emperor. I am nothing. I am a doormat." You know, this man has deep psychological problems. I have read biographies of presidents before. seems to be true that we all have psychological issues. Well, why is it not true, therefore, that a president can also have psychological issues? Is he somehow an emperor? Is he as close to God as the emperor of Japan was once seen to be? Is Obama a god that we can't say he's also a man? And therefore, since we know he is only a man, and therefore, since all men suffer psychological problems, is it not logical to assume that he may have psychological problems? And if so, what are his psychological problems, and how do they affect this man's behavior and his overt contempt for America, its history and its people, and his love of everything third world? I did a piece called Obama on the Couch a while ago, way back in the beginning. Obama on the Couch, where I talked about him having a mother, basically, who abandoned him, a father who abandoned him, a mother who kept looking for new husbands in the third world. And you start to put a picture together of a guy who has such deep-seated inferiority feelings, it seems as though he's looking for his father all over the world. And it seems as though he wants to get away from America as often as possible in order to get rid of some bad ideas about this country. But anyway, the reason I'm watching the World War II series is because I keep reminding myself, whenever I start to want to complain about things in my own life, how easy I have it, how easy we all have it. And I look at these guys fighting in the jungles of the South Pacific. Let me tell you, I collected plants in the South Pacific. That was hard enough. But I wasn't trudging through the jungle being shot at by snipers. I wasn't living in fear 24/7 and laying down at night in mud. And it was difficult enough. I don't know how these guys did it. I remember one of them in the series on History Channel says, "God, I thought farm work was tough, but that was nothing compared to this." And now I'm reminded, for those of you listening to this show, farm work is one of the toughest of all lives, particularly before World War II. In the 1930s, farm work was murder. In fact, I had a friend who was a teenage troublemaker, a nice guy, but he was always getting in trouble. And his father sent him to work on a farm one summer, I think, somewhere in Minnesota. And this kid was a strong kid. He was a friend of ours. He said he never worked as hard in his life. It was the hardest work he's ever done. Every muscle in his body ached by the time he laid down at the end of the day. He slept, you know, as soundly as you can sleep because he was so tired. And look what we have today. How the hell can this country ever defend itself? And then you look at the guys we're sending over to Iraq and Afghanistan. Believe me, they're as brave, they're as tough as they were in World War II. The only difference is they have a set of engagement rules that nobody on earth could ever follow with and come out alive. And these rules were not written by Obama. They were written by Bush's generals. It's horrible to think that we have fallen as a nation. We go to war, we don't even know why we're fighting. The men go to war, they don't know what they're fighting for. The men go to war and they have to consult the manual on how to fight the war. And I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, looming over it all is China with, 30 million single men, 30 million excess single men, all of whom are as tough as nails, who could live on a handful of rice a day. And we here in America are concerned about put your hat on backwards, go to the porn theater, put the porn on the internet, go have your sex. It's unbelievable to me. I have no question in my mind that if this keeps up, we're finished as a nation. And pardon me for rambling today. I'm just all over the map. But it's been a long day's journey, and tonight I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449. You know the number, the website. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know what Hillary Clinton's going to do. I mean, if I were her, I would act on my behalf because, A, I don't belong in a list. It was a mistake. It only makes her look good. If she intervenes on my behalf, she wins. She can't lose with this. First of all, it was a mistake to put me on the list. Second of all, she shows herself to be above the petty politics that we all hate. And she wins a lot of independent voters for when she runs in the primaries against Obama, which she's going to do. People aren't even talking about it. Talking about Sarah Palin. But there's no question in my mind that Hillary's going to run against Obama in the primaries and she'd win because he's been a wreckage. She, you know, by comparison, Hillary would have been a far better president than he because the woman, for whatever her left-wing leanings are, has been around long enough for us to know who she is. This guy is an unknown quotient, and I have to keep repeating until you finally get it through your head. He is out of the ken of mainstream politics. He's off the edge of the world from the Democrat mainstream. And he is a far-left college teacher who has surrounded himself with questionable people all of his life. He has all of the attitudes of the far left, and he has these feelings that America is not a good place, a bad place, and the rest of the world is a wonderful place. Meaning he's very naive. He's actually more than naive. He's very dangerous because he's not a college teacher. He is the president. And by bowing to the king of Saudi Arabia, bowing to the fellow in Japan, the reason I keep saying the fellow in Japan is because I can't keep saying the word emperor. I don't like the word emperor. I won't say the emperor. I say the fellow in Japan. You know, who is he? Who is he? Just the guy with a tuxedo. Why does he bow down like that? What is this all about? Anyway, the good news is please go to michaelsavage.com. 1.4 million of you do every month. And will you please download the letter from Representative Culberson, who will be joining us very shortly on the Savage Nation. He's going to make me an honorary Texan. He invited me into the Texas Navy. I'm getting the uniform. And look, here I live in California. I do not have a representative. I do not have a senator I can go to. I do not have a congressman I can go to. Can you imagine the sad state of this country that I have to go to a congressman in Texas to get my case heard? Think about this. We supposedly live in a free country. We supposedly live in a democracy. We supposedly live in a representative government with a representative government. Yet I have not one representative in the state of California, which is vast, who will represent my interests. Think about that. Think about it. How is it possible? And I'm not alone. 55-60% of the American people are self-identified as middle center conservatives. They have no representation by and large. The country has been hijacked by the radical left using ACORN and illegal alien voters.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Michael Savage of California has to go all the way to Texas to get representation in a representative democracy. And joining us now is the great Congressman John Culberson, my hero. Congressman, thank you for being on the Savage Nation, and thanks for sending that letter to Hillary Clinton today.
Well, Michael, I'm glad to be with you, and I am glad to help. After all, you're living in San Francisco. You're a conservative. You believe in the Constitution. And, hey, you know, what kind of representation are you going to get out of San Francisco? So we're proud to have you as an honorary Texan, Michael. And I'm glad to help you, my friend. You deserve it. It's the right thing to do. And my rule always has been you do the right thing for the right reasons and good things happen.
Senator, I mean, I should say Senator, Congressman Culberson, what is the likelihood of Secretary Hillary realizing that this would be to her own advantage to act on my behalf? In a sense, I never belonged on a list to begin with. The British have admitted the list as foolish. Wouldn't it position her as a more centrist individual, and do you think she will therefore act on my behalf for her own interests?
Michael, I think so, because it is the right thing to do. You have been wrong. You are, like, as any other American, you have the absolute right to travel to England or any other nation, just as any other law-abiding American would. Certainly your First Amendment rights as an American, your freedom of speech has been curtailed. You have business interests in London. And as you know, Michael, I am handling this not only as in my official capacity, I'm helping you as with the State Department, but I'm handling my office, Michael, is handling this as constituent casework. We are pursuing your case to get a visa issued to Michael Savage to travel to England at any time for any reason. And I think that she could, anyone looking at this, sees the obvious injustice of denying a law-abiding American the right to travel to England. But, Michael, above and beyond that, I find it deeply offensive that they put you on a list with terrorists and criminals and murderers. It's outrageous, it's offensive, and it really demeans England. It is, it diminishes that great country for them to attack you in this way, to list you with these people. And frankly, it's the right thing to do, and we need you speaking out loud and clear. This is a decisive moment for America, Michael, and you're a warrior to protect our borders, our language, our culture, and our Constitution, my friend. And I'm proud of
you. You know, the way, Congressman, we've never met, have we? But over 58,000 people have signed the petition to defend me on my website. Thousands have donated to the Legal Defense Fund. But you are, my friend, the first member of Congress to have intervened on my behalf. Now, I realize the issue is way beyond me. It's freedom of speech, freedom of travel, by the way. Freedom of travel is very important here. What I'm bewildered by is how the American media itself doesn't understand the ramifications of this particular case and how they refuse to talk about it.
What they do to you in England, Michael, they can do to anyone in the media. Anyone who speaks up and out is threatened by what England has done to you. So we all have an interest in protecting your right to speak, no matter whether you agree or disagree with your position. I enjoy your show. I'm a fan. Listen to the Savage Nation regularly. And I just have been outraged by the way the British government treated you and just stepped up to help you. I am sure we'll get a bunch of colleagues on board to help with this, Michael, because it's the right thing to do. We truly, Michael, are at a decisive moment, as you have said many times on the show, which is why I like to listen to you. You speak common sense from the heart. You speak about and defend American values that made us great, and we will either become a bankrupt Argentina, third world nation, whose debt won't be bought by anybody else with a worthless dollar, or we will return to what made America great, our core principles, our Constitution, and put the federal government back in their box and defend our language, our borders, and our culture that made America what it is, and welcome any and everyone from all over the world. Come and join us, but you will learn English, and you'll become an American, and you work hard like our forefathers did. And, Michael, you embody that. You speak for all of us who are fed up with a federal government that's out of control, and this liberal Congress, your congresswoman, and this president are going to drive America over a financial cliff. And, Michael, we need you out there speaking up for the Constitution and our freedoms. And in Texas, that's what it's all about. Our most important right in Texas for all Americans, leave me alone. That's your most important right.
I must have been my grandfather, who's no longer with us, who came here from Russia, must have landed in the wrong state, because he should have landed in Texas rather than New York. I am absolutely spiritually a Texan through and through. I think I've just been living in the wrong state all these years.
Well, we'll have you as an honorary Texan out there in the frontiers in San Francisco, which is, we call it the left coast, in Texas. And I just thank
Well, you've got some great coast in Texas where at least I can do some boating. I mean, what's the best city to live in Texas if you're a boating lover?
Well, frankly, the best city in Texas is Houston, because you're right next to Galveston Bay in Houston, a magnificent city with wonderful people that are hospitable, that are conservative, that have common sense and love the Constitution and freedom. We have very few labor unions, Michael. We have no personal income tax. So you come to Texas, no state personal income tax, very
wow.
few lawyers, no, and in unions, Michael, we'd love to have you. And Galveston Bay is fabulous for sailing.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put that on my list because I'm in the wrong state. I increasingly come to realize that we're living in a country with a representative democracy, and yet here I'm a member of the state of California, citizen of the state of California in the U.S. I do not have one member of Congress who I can turn to in the entire state. It doesn't matter that the state is somewhat liberal. Shouldn't it be common sense that there should be representation for all members and all citizens of a state?
Well, no question. You've got some good conservatives there in California, in your valley. I often hear that you have almost two states in California. You've got a lot of good conservatives out there in the California delegation. Elton Gallagher, you've got a lot of good guys out there. But, Michael, I'm proud to help you in Texas. I just happen to be the first guy to contact you. There's others out there. I know we'll have other colleagues help. There's a lot of fine conservative members of Congress that honor the Constitution, that want to protect this great nation and put the federal government back in their box. and get the government out of our lives and out of our...
Congressman Culberson, when are you running again in your district? I'm very curious about that.
Every other year. Congressmen are up for election every other year. I'm up for re-election, Michael, next year, but
Can my listeners send donations to your campaign, even if they're not citizens of, let's say, residents of your district?
Well, Michael, you're very gracious, but I'm truly doing this really because it's the right thing to do.
No, I know that. I mean, I'm sorry to make. I don't know what to do to say thank you. I mean, I know that money is the mother's milk of politics, but so is honesty. You're the most honest member of Congress I've ever encountered. You're the kind of guy that won World War II. You're the kind of guy that if you were my platoon leader and you said charge into a machine gun nest, I would do what you told me to do. I'd be proud to fight alongside you any day of the week. But I'd like to be able to do something for you. I don't want to just be passive about accepting your kindness.
You're very gracious, Michael. You do it every day by being a warrior for freedom and standing up for our rights as Americans to get the government out of our lives, out of our pockets, and out of our way, and protect us from, Michael, this overreaching federal government. You're a warrior, my friend, and I'm proud to help you. This is literally a decisive moment. We will look back 20 and 30 years from now and look at each other and say, what did you do to preserve America when we will either become Argentina and bankrupt and in a socialist nation where the government controls us from the cradle to the grave, Michael, as you've said.
You know, even the Chinese government is questioning Obama's and Pelosi's health care plan. Basically, the Chinese are saying it's unsupportable. What are you doing?
Yeah, the Chinese want to make sure they get paid back. They're no dummies. They want to get their money back on all those treasury bonds they've been buying, Michael. And it's vital that we stand behind warriors for freedom like you are, Michael. And I'm proud to help you. And there's a lot of guys in Congress that will step up and join us. We're proud to have you as an honorary Texan. You are going to need to get a concealed carry permit, Michael, because, a law-abiding, God-fearing Texan, my constituents believe strongly in the Second Amendment right to protect yourself. We believe in limited government. We don't need labor unions. We don't need many lawyers. We want the government out of our lives, out of our pockets. Michael, you should be a Texan, and we're proud to have you and as honorary Texan. I'm proud to help you, Michael. Just it's the right thing to do, Michael. If I do the right thing for the right reasons, good things happen every time.
Well, I'll let it go at that. I don't want to press the issue now. This, in one sense, though, I have a question before you go, Congressman Culberson. Remember the issue of Ramos and Campion, the falsely accused border agents? And it took Congress, 99 members of Congress said it was outrageous, including Democrats such as Feinstein, and yet Bush still wouldn't grant them amnesty till virtually the last day. Isn't this somewhat in the same category in some ways?
Michael, you and I first met in that fight. Congressman Ted Poe and I led that charge in Congress, and that was where we first met. You had me on the show because I was out front and center at the tip of the spear to get Ramos and Campion out of prison and make sure they were pardoned, and I hand-carried a letter as President Bush was packing up the moving vans literally the Thursday before the Tuesday when he left. I was at the White House with a letter signed by, I'd gotten from every member of Congress from Texas, including our two senators, saying, please, Mr. President, do the right thing. Free Ramos and Campion. Again, Michael, the right thing for the right reasons. We need to focus on legislating for the next generation, and the next election always takes care of itself, my friend. And Texas, I know Texans stand behind you, my friend. Every American across this country that honors the Constitution and freedom and cares about this decisive moment in history where Obama will either bankrupt us and we'll become a socialist nation like France, controlling us from the cradle to the grave, or we're going to become America that we know and love and are proud of, Michael.
Amen.
And I'm not going to sit by and let it happen, and you're not either, and I'm proud to help you.
Well, Congressman Culberson, I hope that we meet in the near future, and anything I can and will do on your behalf, I will. And I know you did this simply for the value of the reality of doing the right thing. I know there was never a quid pro quo. We've never met, nor have we ever agreed upon anything in return. All I can say is I'm humbled by your Americanism and your willingness to intervene on my behalf. It's been a long, long struggle, virtually all alone. And Congressman Culberson, I want to thank you again.
It's my privilege, Michael, and we'll keep you posted on the progress, and I'll be bird-dogging this personally with the Department of State, and we'll get you your visa and free you from this terrible travel ban, Michael, And thank you for being a warrior for the American Constitution and to protect our sacred freedoms from this out-of-control Obama-Pelosi federal government.
God bless you, John Culberson, Member of Congress, and thank you for being on the Savage Nation. It's 46 minutes after the hour. If you care to comment on this issue, please do so. I don't know what you could possibly say that has not already been said. I'm almost numb in the sense that I've tried to ignore the situation for a while. I don't talk about the book much anymore. I know thousands and thousands and thousands of you have ordered the book and have received the book ban in Britain. I know many more of you will order it shortly for the holidays. I'm aware of that. And I've set the record straight in my book. But I've been awestruck by the loudness of the silence of the media in the sense that how in the hell don't they understand what's at stake here? Certainly people can put petty interests aside, even if they don't like the man, even if they're competing with the man, I say to myself. I'm not looking for the publicity for myself so much. Yeah, there's probably an element to that, I would think, being human. And that's fine, to err as human, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is, it's astonishing to me how they can get away with this. Anyway, I hope that Hillary Clinton, who's a very brilliant politician, comes to understand the advantage to doing the right thing. This is a win-win for everybody. And if she does move to get this thing cleared up, we'll have a huge celebration. And I'll make a commitment to the listeners on the Savage Nation, health being number one. Should the ban be lifted eventually, and should I be given the visa and be allowed to go to England to the Kew Gardens to visit my plant collections? There are things I need to do with those plant collections. They're extremely rare and very valuable, particularly for world science, not simply because they're mementos. I will try to organize a tour with several thousand American listeners of the Savage Nation. Maybe we'll all fly over in five airplanes. Maybe we'll charter a cruise ship and all go together on one ship and a land in Southampton to a band, and then have a tour of the pubs of England, but I won't drink single malt scotch. I'll just drink some beer, and we'll all go over to Kew Gardens. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
President Hu and I also made progress on the issue of climate change. As the two largest consumers and producers of energy, there can be no solution to this challenge without the efforts of both China and the United States.
Let's stop right here. China's the biggest polluter on the planet. We have one of the cleanest nations on the planet. Let him stop the double talk. Okay, what's he going to do, make them stop their industrialization because he wants them to? What do you want me to do? I can't wait for the hair of the dog, that's all. What's that phrase, the hair of the dog? The hair of the dog, yeah, the hair of the dog. No, when the show's over, I'm getting the hair of the dog. There's no question about it. No, it's a great day for me. I mean, but, you know, things don't really change. It's basically whether you have a headache or a footache. All of the big things in your life actually disappear if you have a headache. And all the big things in your life disappear if you have a pebble in your shoe or a hangover. The truth is all you can think about is a toothache or a headache. And I got to go to the dentist again tomorrow. I had a tooth implant last week. I have this titanium in my head. I don't know. It's like I'm Mr. Natural now with the bionic man. For me, it's weird, the idea of any implant in my body. I pity the women with all the breast implants. I don't like breast implants. I think they make women look terrible, by the way. I think it's one of the great scams of all time to mutilate women like that. I mean, the natural body, without getting graphic, I don't have to spell it out, is very beautiful. God designed it that way. Even as a woman ages, it's beautiful. What's with making everyone look like a Barbie doll? It's ludicrous, this whole concept of the false woman. Who in the world finds that attractive? Anyway, I'm just mulling over the titanium implant in my head for my tooth. You know, I was thinking about if they could put a titanium, I'll try to do this delicately. If they could put a titanium implant in your, you know where I'm going with this, right? Yeah, okay, I should stop right now. Because I ran into a cardiologist friend of mine today in the mall for lunch. And I was telling him that I said I have a titanium implant in my upper, this, and the tooth looks great. and I really shouldn't have suffered with it all these years. And he laughed, and I started thinking about the other possibilities for a titanium implant, you know? When you think about it, I mean, could that work? Is there a possibility that could be in time, in years to come? I mean, we're only chemically adjusting that particular thing right now. Why not just go the whole route? Well, all right, then it creates sartorial implications, which we can't get into right now. Oh, boy. I was reading through a 500-page manuscript that I pulled out of my storage bin a few weeks ago called In Search of the Durian, and it's about all of my years collecting medicinal plants in the Fiji Islands and how difficult those years really were. And I look back and say to myself, why did I sacrifice some of my youth? I was 32 years old, and I was spending my own money on research, trying to better humanity. What the hell was I thinking? Why didn't I just do what all of the other boys did, you know, like sell real estate or trade in stocks or whatever? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. What in the world was I looking for in all of these islands and all of these places, collecting plants, hoping to find a cure for this and a cure for that? And, you know, it ties right into the ban in Britain when you think about it. This just long sweep of a person's life. I mean, what is the connection? I remember Aldous Huxley wrote, I think he was quoting somebody else, life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backward. Well, I'm not at the point where I can truly understand it backward to the, you know, where I can't really connect the dots completely. But all of those years of traveling in and out of the islands, and frankly, I hated it. You know, I stumbled on a letter from an older scientist friend who died last year, and I told him how much I actually despise being alone in the islands collecting plants and how it was unromantic and horrible, and being in the third world, I didn't like it at all. And he said to me, you know, Michael, he was a very distinguished professor of microbiology. He said to me, Michael, he said, a lot of people don't like getting up 6:30 in the morning and reporting at 9. In other words, that's your job, man. Just do it. He said, everybody hates field work. And the point is that many scientists, you know, you see national, like they love it. They don't love it. They don't love it at all. They're doing it because they have to do it, most of them. That's the reality as opposed to the fantasy. You get it?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson wheat.
It is
back in
Mike
the saddle
Savage,
again.
An honorary Texan. What if Grandpa
more
had landed in Texas instead of New York? I wonder how my life would have been different.
44,
just can't imagine, you know, where you're in. All right, thanks, Gene Autry. I used to play this over and over and over again when I was a little boy trapped in a... in an apartment in the Bronx, a little apartment with relatives. I mean, it was beautiful in its own way. I mean, I didn't know it was bad, but it wasn't. To me, it was great. But I used to play this Gene Autry thing on a little Victrola that I had. I could smell it to this day, the smell of the felt on top of the turntable. I played this record, Gene Autry, Back in the Saddle, and the lines in it, the lyrics, you know, hi-yi, yippee-yi-yi, but the open plains and where the deer and the antelope play, it was so amazing to a kid trapped in a, in essence, a ghetto. A little ghetto, you know, crowded, and little did I know that the ghetto was actually beautiful because everybody knew each other, everyone took care of each other. The men protected all the other children as though that they were their own. There was no molestation to speak of in those days. You know, fathers looked with a suspicious eye on any stranger that walked down the street, and if the man came around a few too many times, they threw him down a flight of stairs. and he never came back to the neighborhood again. The children were basically free to run in the streets and dance in the open fire hydrants. It was a different universe. I mean, what a world. I'm very lucky I grew up at that time. I don't know how in the world people can't understand how beautiful America was in the 1950s. It was a different universe, and I realize, I mean, I've been around, I don't want to admit it, but quite a while, and you look back and you see the changes in a country, which are to be expected, over a 60-year span, and it's unbelievable. But then again, I mean, what was America in 1880 to 1940, you know? What am I talking about? Things change. Things move on. That I understand. Change I understand. I'm into change. I get it. But to see the country hijacked like this by an extremely well-oiled machine of deviance, and I mean deviant financial deviance. Remember, you've always got to follow the money. Always follow the money. Although Obama is an extremist of the highest order, although he represents the farthest fringe of the liberal movement in America, remember, when you say liberal, there is a spectrum from the modest liberal of the, I don't even know who to use as an example, truthfully. I mean, maybe today it would be they call him the blue dog Democrat, from the moderate liberal to the communist. But the fact of the matter is Obama is on the furthest fringe of the left wing. How in the world the people behind him managed to foist him on the American people is a story that historians will have to tell. Unfortunately, 99% of the historians are extreme liberals themselves, so you're never going to get the true story. But here we are living through an experiment that has never been tried before in America. This dance with socialism, to put it in a mild way, is this experiment with socialism. Is something unique. We've never really done it. Yes, Eugene V. Debs and all of that. Back in the 30s, there were experiments with socialists and socialist parties and things of that nature. But we never had a socialist president, an overt socialist president. How in the world could anyone argue, is he a socialist? I mean, any person of the most modest sophistication in politics in Europe understands Obama is a socialist. What are they asking? Is he a socialist? They ask, ha, ha, ha. Oh, the right wing says he's a socialist. How crazy. How could you ask such a question? Of course he is a socialist. The correct question is how extremist a socialist is his administration. That is the question. When you look at the shadow government of this interloper, and you look at the czars that this man has surrounded himself with, you have to say to yourself, we are in very deep trouble, and I don't know that we'll ever come out of it. It's true the two of the czars have been fired because they were found out. It's true that the two of them have been thrown out. I have in my hand a great magazine called Whistleblower by World Net Daily, and it's about the shadow government inside the mad, 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 mad world of Obama's czars. It's amazing. From Joe Farah put this out. It's astounding. I don't know how Joe does this, where he gets the stamina to do this. But the shadow government, as written by David Kupelian, is something everybody has to own because Obama's czars, he writes, are unaccountable to anyone on earth but him. And they are a reflection of Obama's worldview and policy positions. They are a reflection of where Barack Obama wants to take America, and it's not a very pretty picture. Some of the names you know. Some of them you do not know. Some of them have been fired. Some of them have not been fired. The names are familiar. For example, Sunstein. Sunstein, who defends communism, but says the white majority opposes programs aiding blacks and Hispanics. He's a stone-hearted racist, in my opinion, answering only to Obama. The continuation of the czars, it gets worse. I mean, that's just one of them. Obama czar pick, a raving animal rights nut. Advisor advocated hunting ban and giving creatures the right to file lawsuits. That's Cass Sunstein. Obama, not courts, should interpret law, says regulatory czar. You hear? The king Obama should interpret law, not even the courts. You've heard of activist judges? How about an activist president, he says, should override the courts? Then you've got Douglas Lute, the war czar. Then you've got Ashton Carter, the weapons czar. Then you've got Melissa Hathaway, the cyber czar. Then you've got Joshua Dubois, the faith-based czar. You never heard of these people. Then you got the resigned Van Jones, the green job czar, formerly of Cop Watch in Oakland, California. And then you've got Adolfo Carrion Jr., White House Director of Urban Affairs, another czar. Where'd these people come from? Earl Devancey, stimulus czar. Anesh Chopra, technology czar. Rosa Brooks, on and on and on. Every one of them is an extreme leftist. Every one of them is off the charts on the left wing. Every one of them would be laughed out of any academic forum where there was a balanced panel. And yet here they are sitting inside the White House, all the president's czars. Ron Blum, manufacturing czar. As a teenager, Ron Blum spent the summers at a camp run by Habonim, a labor Zionist youth movement, which emphasizes cultural Judaism, socialism, and social justice. You say, well, what's wrong with that? I would say plenty is wrong with that. I grew up with Red Diaper Dopa babies. Every last one of them is a dangerous individual. Red Diaper Dopa babies are dangerous to this republic, in my humble opinion. Shall I read on? I can't read on. Mark Lloyd, FCC diversity czar. Did you hear about this character? Have you seen what this hateful hate monger has written about the Federal Communications Commission and how this hate monger wants to take it over and fundamentally get rid of white people who are conservatives? Vivek Kundra, information czar. Dennis Blair, remember that character, the intelligence czar? And you wonder why we can't win in Afghanistan? How about Ezekiel Emanuel, MD, the de facto health care czar? Who is he? Well, he is the brother of White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, Ezekiel Emanuel has written publications which basically meters out health care and says that if a person is 65 years old, he has enjoyed 40 years more of health care than a person 25 years old, and that he should be treated differently than a 25-year-old. In other words, he does not have the rights to health care that a 25-year-old has. That's another one of the czars. Cameron Davis, Great Lakes czar. Daniel Freed, Guantanamo Closure czar. Who is Daniel Freed? Where did he come from? Why is he even there? Why does he want to close Guantanamo? Why did he want to flood America with dangerous terrorists? Harold Coe, legal advisor to the State Department. Who was this dangerous character? Where did he come from? What did this man want to do? What does he want to do to your country? Richard Holbrooke, remember him? Richard Holbrooke cheered on as American bombers decimated Serbia during the illegitimate bombing of the Serbian people. I told you at that time it was to steal Kosovo from the Serbs. I told you in 1998 when it was happening, it was the worst 78 days of my life to watch our nation hijacked by Richard Holbrooke, by Madeleine Albright. They're war criminals, in my opinion. They took the United States Air Force and they repainted the airplanes. They put NATO markings on them. And under the command of the socialist Spaniard, Javier Solar, they bombed Serbia into submission. They blew up every bridge on the Danube River, and with a little help from their friends in the media, not one picture was ever shown of the decimation done to the bridges on the Danube River by Bill Clinton, Richard Holbrooke, and Madeleine Albright. And it was all done in order to free up the Albanian people inside Kosovo and to free up the al-Qaeda members who were flying in and coming in to fight against the Serbs. You know nothing about the assassination of the Serbs. You know nothing about what was done to the Serbians by these terrorists, and yet Bill Clinton took the side of the terrorists. It's unbelievable to me. He is on the list. Richard Holbrooke, another great man. Another wonderful great man. He's another one of the prominent politicians suspected of receiving sweetheart loans from the mortgage lender Countrywide at the height of the mortgage crisis. Condé Nast portfolio reported that deals offered to Richard Holbrooke and family members that saved thousands of dollars in interest payments may have bent rules. So it's always about the money. Just remember, it's never about principle with these people. They may look like leftists. They may talk like leftists. They may walk like leftists. But at the end of the day, it's all about money. It's always about the money. So if you want to see this full list of these dangerous extremists who are the shadow government in the United States of America, if you want to see the pictures of them, if you want to see the shadow party behind Obama's radical administration, George Soros, John Podesta, Bill Ayers, Carol Browner, Jeff Jones, and others, you have to go to my good friend,
Dan, you have to go to my good friend, Joe Farah. You got to get Whistleblower Magazine, and you got to save this thing. It's a freak show. Unfortunately, it's not Ringling Brothers. It's the United States of America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while.
Joe Stafford, you belong to me.
You belong to me.
Listen to the lyrics for a minute.
See. Send me photographs and souvenirs.
Anyway, it's beautiful, beautiful, pretty stuff.
Remember when a dream appears.
You belong to me, right? People had a romantic notion about life in those days. Look how cynical we become. Look at the lyrics today. I'm going to bust a cap and put it in your hat. I mean, unbelievable. That passes for music, you hear? I'm going to bust a cap and put it in your hat. I'm going to break a stick over your neck. That's music. That's music. Hieroglyphics are above what we have today. How did this happen? How does it happen? You see schmuck white boys with pants hanging down under their behinds listening to garbage like this, and you say to yourself, no wonder we have Obama as president. Pimply white boys running around with pants falling off their behinds listening to this garbage in their cars. How can they ever get married? How can they ever have a family? The answer is they can't. Yeah, this is music that they listen to, the morons. A pot cigarette in their mouth, and that they're geniuses. Turn it off. Turn this illiterate garbage off. I don't ever want to hear it again. I'm sick of it. It's not music. It's nothing. It's jumbled hate. It's just jumbled hate from the ghetto. And if you don't like it, you know what? I don't like it. You like it, go listen to a station that plays that crap. It's jumbled hate from the ghetto. Now, they're entitled to play the jumbled hate from the ghetto. And I'm entitled to say it's jumbled hate from the ghetto, and I'm sick of it. How did we devolve as a society over a half a century from literacy and beauty and romance into this nightmare where the radical left has seized the moment? They've got the country in a noose, and they're tightening it by the moment. That even the Chinese, who hold so much of our debt, are saying to Obama they're concerned about the health care plan that he has in mind, which is going to raise costs. The liars, the Nancy Pelosi, the people with the drug faces. Oh, what a wonderful thing we did. We're going to give it to everybody, the health care, and it's going to be and it's going to raise costs, it turns out. Chinese are saying, wait a minute, we own a lot of your debt. It's unsupportable. What the hell are you doing? There's no answer to the question. How many times have I told you that you see the ideology, it's radical leftist ideology coming out of Obama, right? But it's always about the money. You haven't any idea how much money is at stake. You can't even fathom how much they're going to steal over the next decade for themselves and their cronies. What do you think? All this money is for the betterment of humanity? You think all of this spending is because they care about illegal immigrants? It's all about naked power grabbing. And all about stealing as much as they can, as fast as they can, because the Republicans are powerless to have any control over them whatsoever. Now, pardon me for getting off the track, but everything leads back to the horror that we're living through. I met some people the other night who said to me, do you think Obama will be a one-term president? And I didn't answer right away. I guess they thought I'd give them a knee-jerk conservative answer of, oh, sure, he'll be a one-term president. My answer was quite different. I thought for a while as they sipped their drinks and I said, well, the people who put him in power, we don't know who they are. We have a suspicion who they are. They're extremely powerful. They're very devious. They own the media. And if they could have pulled this off, and if they pull off granting amnesty to illegal aliens, which is what Janet Napolitano, Department of Homeland Security, was set up to do. Remember, think about this. Here's a woman who was set up to protect America's borders. Instead, she is telling you that she's going to protect the illegal alien interlopers from Americans. She's taken the side of the invaders instead of the side of the Americans who would like to stop the invaders. The fox, the chicken coop, the whole thing's upside down. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's Obama in Leninland.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.
It is the Savage Nation.
Beyond the sea,
it was all about love. I'm starting to think about everything today is about cynicism and sarcasm and hatred. Even the comedy. Women are demeaned and debased. Look at these comedy movies that are made. I don't know, Road Sex. All these. It's always about debasing a woman by the liberals in Hollywood. They claim that they're like equality freaks and this and that. When do they hold a woman up to some standard of nobility? When? When have you seen something where it's either a fake, always a warrior. I love it. Always a warrior. The plastic woman with a sword, a gun, a knife. It's all rubbish. Always the woman hero, the heroine, like a comic book. How could a young girl grow up and want to be a mother in a society that's so corrupted by the degenerates in Hollywood? The sewer pipe. The sewer pipe that runs out of the sickest minds of our generation is astounding to me. How people don't stand up. You want me to get started on it again? You want me to get started on that degenerate sicko Larry David? You want me to get started? I tuned in again. I watched it again. They made a mockery of a 9-year-old's private parts. The whole show was a joke about her private parts. In my day, the man would be arrested. He is a sexual deviant. The whole crowd around Curb Your Enthusiasm should be arrested for child sexual abuse. Everybody at HBO should be handcuffed and arrested for child sexual abuse. The whole thing was about a 9-year-old's private part. You think that's appropriate humor for a bald, old, disgusting, degenerate piece of human trash to make that into a joke? That's a funny thing? That's humor? I mean, I can laugh at a dirty joke like everybody else. But when you are so desperate for attention that you start to make derogatory comments about Jesus 2 weeks ago and you show urine on your picture of Jesus, then 2 weeks later you top yourself by now. You're taking a 9-year-old girl and you have the mother character saying she has a rash on her blank. And the whole show is about the rash on a 9-year-old's blank, in dirty words now. That's what's put on television by HBO? We have thousands of people in the police department looking for sexual predators. We have police departments who are searching the internet at all times trying to catch people who abuse young girls and young boys. You are telling me that what HBO did with this sack of human trash, Larry David, ridiculing a 9-year-old and using her sexual part is not sexual abuse? You're telling me this belongs in a society? A society can survive with these kind of sick minds from Brooklyn? And they all laugh. Seinfeld is the big gee, Seinfeld. If he smiles on the show, you're supposed to smile. If he opens his big ugly mouth and the teeth are showing, you're supposed to think he approved it, and therefore it's funny. You're supposed to laugh because they made a joke about a woman's private part and a 9-year-old girl's privates, the whole show. I want this guy arrested. I'd like to see him arrested. This is not freedom of speech. This is not entertainment. This is now child abuse. How do they get away with it? How do they get away with it? How do these sick people from Brooklyn get away with this? How do they do this and get away with it? How do they support each other and say it's funny? They're all sick in the head. And by the way, these are the people who are foaming at the mouth Obama supporters. Do you understand it? Do you understand the connection between the sewer pipe of Hollywood and the kind of radical left-wing leadership that we have in the presidency? Do you understand why they would want radical leftists in the media and in the White House, because they feel they would have more license to abuse your children and your mind and your Christianity and your religion even more so with this kind of government. They feel liberated now that George Bush, crackpot religious conservative, in their minds is out of office. They're liberated now. They can even make mockery of 9-year-old girls and nothing happens to them. If I were a detective in Hollywood, California,
and I was in the, if they call it a vice department anymore, if I were a detective in any district, by the way, in America where HBO is seen, and I was in the division of child abuse or child sexual abuse or the exploitation of minors, I would seek an immediate arrest of Larry David, the producer, and anyone else associated with that program, and I have them arrested and try them. That's what I would do. I'm telling you what I would do to start to save the country. It has to be done case by case. You have to go after these street vermin, these rats, these sewer rats who pass themselves off as artistes. That's why, by the way, let me bring it to another case. You got the case of the director. The director who gave Quaaludes and alcohol, champagne, I believe, and then sodomized a 13-year-old girl and then fled to France and enjoyed his life. He did Chinatown. I forget his name. It's not like I can't even remember his name. The guy with the nose that looks like Pinocchio. Polanski. So you got the case of Polanski. All of Hollywood has lined up to defend this child rapist, Polanski. All of Hollywood. They did a whole show on him on Showtime, how he's a victim, going back to the Holocaust and Sharon Tate and why he should be left alone. I don't give a rat's behind what happened to him before he raped the 13-year-old girl. I don't care that she, as an adult, says, don't try him, he suffered enough. I say he committed a violent crime against the 13-year-old girl. There are laws on the books, and I think he should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And if what I read in the transcripts is true, then he should go to jail for the rest of his life. And by the way, again, tied into the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood, they are the same people who are now abusing your daughter. They are the same people who are putting out what they think are jokes. Jerry Seinfeld is some architect of morality. Jerry Seinfeld is above the fray when he goes on a show about the private part, a rash on a girl's body, a nine-year-old. Now, why am I going on and on about this? Because I should. Because I should. You see, talk radio is not really a bully pulpit. It never was. We're small voices in a very big world. When I began in talk radio, there was no internet to speak of. Do you know that? 1994, I used to have to go buy magazines and newspapers to do my show. They had a thing called wires. You went on the internet. There's the wires, the AP wires. It was a very difficult business. You had to read much more than you do today. Consequently, now it's actually, in some ways, a thinner business. People who were on talk radio in the early 90s had to actually read magazines and books in order to do a radio show that had any meaning. Now everyone just reads the same internet sites, and the one, he writes it, he writes it, he writes it, he writes it, he writes that. So the same topics appear on every internet site over and over again. Same topics. Very few people, you know, have the time to go outside this to read a book or to look into it, anything any deeper. So actually the band of topics is much narrower today than it ever was in talk radio. You know what I'm saying? But here we are, and we look at what's going on in the media, and you say to yourself, well, okay, bully pulpit. No, this is not a bully pulpit. There are thousands of outlets in the media today that people can access. iPods and schmipods and bipods and hypods. You can go anywhere you want today and turn a knob and a switch and a wheel, and you can get anything you want in your head. So if I'm in San Francisco, where there are 70-some-odd radio stations, and I'm on in 300-some-odd cities, and there are 50, 80, 100 stations in each, but people can tune in anywhere they want and get diversity of opinion. But the one opinion that Obama and his diversity czars find so offensive are the opinions that I express on this program. Think about it. The thousands of outlets, there's only one part of it all that this Leninist government finds offensive. And that's the one that stands for traditional values, family values, borders, language, and culture. So therefore, you have to conclude that Obama and his minions oppose family values, they oppose tradition, and they oppose the support of our borders, language, and culture. Therefore, they are all traitors. That's how I see it. That's one man's opinion. That's one man's opinion. Now, they have all the power. I have no power. I'm a man alone in front of a microphone. They are the dangerous Caesars of our day. They are the Caesars who permit child sexual abuse to occur verbally on HBO, in my opinion. And I want to remind you that violence begins with thoughts. If you can start verbally abusing a young girl on HBO through comedy. In a few years, they will actually start to show 9-year-old girls being physically abused, and it'll be a laugh fest, I guess, with Larry David and his friends from the slums of Brooklyn showing big teeth as a little child is abused on HBO, because after all, there are no standards, because those damn religious conservatives are no longer a factor in America, right? Isn't that how it works? You say it can happen here, it is happening here. And the sewer pipe of Hollywood has to be stopped. The sewer pipe has to be stopped. Cancel your HBO subscriptions. If you are a church member, and I said it to you 2 weeks ago, then I stopped talking about it, you have the power. You don't know what power you have. You have no idea what power you have in a church. Do you realize that every poll shows that the majority of Americans self-identify as centrist conservatives, center-right people, and that we're ruled by a band of extreme leftists? Think about it. The majority of Americans in every state and every poll identify as center-right, and yet we have very little representation. You hear me? But we have the population. They may have the representation. And the one thing you have that they can't control is your pocketbook. You can vote with your pocketbook. If you got every church member, any idea what power you could have? You could say, I am canceling HBO because image on a show, and I'm never going to listen to HBO again. You could do whatever you want. You could put it that way or any other way you want it. Look, I don't live for this. This is not what I got up in the morning to do today. I got up in the morning like every other morning. Today I happen to have a bad hangover because I drank too much scotch, as I told you. But I am the kind of man who never misses a bell. I rarely miss a bell. Let's put it to you that way. I rarely miss the bell, and I come out for every fight. And I'll fight the full 15 rounds every day. And I'll give it my all, and I'll stop dancing. You know, it's a short dance in the sun. And I'm going to dance in the sun as long as God gives me the ability to do so. And there's a lot of things that are worth talking about. And this is one of them. And I'm Michael Savage, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Darling, you sent me. I know you sent me.
Thank you for listening to my tirade against the degenerates and the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Somali pirates get a ransom now of $3.3 million to release a ship. I have to laugh at the U.S. Navy. I don't blame the men in the Navy. They can do their job. I can't believe who's running this country. We have the most powerful Navy on Earth, 8 aircraft carriers, very brave young men who fly them, and we let a bunch of Somali pirates capture ships without blowing them out of the water? Why? Tell me the thinking behind this. Tell me why when they see one of these boats coming near them, they don't just shoot a missile and blow them up out of the water. You could put an end to piracy in a few days. Kill them. They get the ransom, so what do you think they're going to do the next day? They're going to take another tuna ship, another yacht, another this, another that. What is going on in this world? Who is running the West? The answer is, well, you know the answer. Pacifists, socialists, people who hate only the patriots of their own country. Terrorists they seem to coddle. Pirates they seem to appease. Communist dictators they bow down to. But American patriots they both fear and hate. Very sad and very dangerous time we are living in. Sacramento, Peter, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I enjoy red wine, you know, quite frequently. And I was wondering, what is too much red wine? And is there something I can do to kind of protect maybe my liver or something I can take?
Well, you're asking the right person, first of all. The simplest rule of how much is too much with alcohol is, do you get a hangover? That's your bellwether. I mean, if you have two glasses and you more or less the next day don't have a hangover, it's not too much. But if you have three and you get a hangover, that's too much. You want to use simple terms. I think that's the best way to determine it on your own without going to a doctor. So how much can you drink?
Well, 3-4 glasses.
Wow. So what? And what? No hangover the next day?
No hangover, no.
So what are you worried about? Who told you to worry about your liver?
Well, you know, I've just started ultrasound program, diagnostic ultrasound program, and I see so many patients that come in with cirrhotic livers, and it's like you start getting paranoid a little bit. You know.
Well, do you have any indication that you have a cirrhotic liver or any kind of what's your SGOT level? You know, does your doctor say your liver's compromised in any way?
Oh no, not at all. No, I just.
People vary all over the map. Look, the British Medical Association wants to define moderate drinking as 5 ounces a day. The AMA keeps changing it from 1 to 1.5. I mean, no one believes any of that. It's not a science at all. It's all a guess. And the individual has to know virtually how much they... I mean, there's some common rules, which is try to eat something while you're drinking, number one, so that you're absorbing it at a different pace, and also drink a lot of water, and I certainly believe in mega vitamins as well. Now, if you have any doubts about liver function, you have to get liver function tests. And then if you do show some sign of early liver function damage, or certainly you want to cut back on your drinking, and you want to take milk thistle. Milk thistle has been proven to not only aid the liver, but also to regenerate liver cells. It's astounding. I used to do this for a living. So you can look into that, but, you know, the quality of the products out there varies all over the map. I used to tell people, you talk about herbs and what to take. You know, not all herbs are alike. You know, there's a difference in the Mercedes 600 and a Yugo, so to speak. Okay, it's the same with herbal medications. You got to know where the Mercedes is and who makes them. And I'm not going to give the name of a brand. You'll have to do your own research. But the Germans did fabulous work on the medical properties of milk thistle. Look it up. And you cannot believe some of these studies. Well, you should believe some of the studies. Milk thistle, the plant, in extract form, will regenerate liver cells. I know many people don't believe it, but check the medical literature. It's astounding. You know, you don't read about it, so you figure it's not true. You didn't see it in the daily news, so it can't be true. There are many things you can do, but the old adage of everything in moderation, I've modified. My joke all my life has been everything in moderation, especially moderation. Because I'm not a moderate person. I'm not a moderate person at all. And I sometimes move very, very slowly, and I don't look like I'm moving quickly, but my mind is always racing, number one. And number two, I'm always working on something. And number three, I lead a very high-stress life. And I've been, I think, very lucky that I'm still living. I'm still living, given my genetic inheritance, owing to a lot of factors, not the least of which is diet and exercise. And tremendous amounts of vitamins. I mean, I drink consistently. There have been days I haven't had a drink, but usually I drink every day, and I don't say I drink moderately. I don't know what you call it, moderately. I mean, sometimes I want one beer or two beers. It's all I'm very lucky. I know what alcoholics go through, and I'm not an alcoholic. An alcoholic has no way to understand when they've had enough. I am very lucky. I've been told this by many people who are alcoholics. Try it on yourself. If I drink one or two drinks, there are days I can get a feedback, a taste. It's enough already. I can feel it. An alcoholic has no such feedback mechanism, and they will drink and drink and drink, ad libitum until they're sick, until they're stumble-bum drunks. They have an illness in that regard, and that's a sad thing, but they should never drink. And people who can control it, meaning some days you feel like having a drink, so you have a drink or more than one. And then the next day you have a hangover, so you don't drink, or you have a beer and call it a day. Or when you're drinking, if you start to get this feeling like it's enough, so it's enough, and you stop. It's self-control. This is sort of a rambling answer. You don't have to read a scientific publication on common sense. And ladies and gentlemen, so far we've done some good things today. Remember, Representative Culberson is a prince. He is a congressman from Texas who has written a letter to Hillary Clinton on my behalf to get my name off the banned in Britain list. And again, I recommend that you go to michaelsavage.com and read his letter and get this very, very important book while copies still remain. This is the Savage Nation. Thank you for listening.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big news today is that a member of Congress is worthy of the name member of Congress in that he represents an American citizen, in my case, Michael Savage. That is John Culbertson, member of Congress from Texas, has sent a letter to Hillary Clinton on my behalf, which I am going to read to you now. Listen to every word. This is a great man. This is the kind of man, I haven't met John Culbertson, by the way, but this is the kind of man, if you watch World War II footage, he's the kind of man who you'd like to be on patrol with in the jungles of the South Pacific. Or if your landing craft just dropped its gate down on the beach at Omaha Beach, he's the kind of man you'd want to be next to. Well, this is what Congress should be. And he wrote a letter on my behalf. No other member of Congress has done this. He's a wonderful man. Listen to this. Dear Secretary Clinton, I urge you to use all diplomatic tools at your disposal to press the United Kingdom to remove Michael Savage from the list of individuals banned from the United Kingdom and to ask the British government to grant them a travel visa as soon as possible. Dr. Savage's rare plant specimens have been archived at Kew Gardens since 1969. They are a world-class collection of rare medicinal plant specimens from Fiji and Tonga. Dr. Savage needs to visit London for a scientific research, but he is unable to do so because of the Home Secretary's travel ban. I strongly urge you to press the British government to lift these restrictions on him immediately. The British government has classified a well-known and popular member of the American media alongside criminals, murderers, and terrorists, which is defamatory and disturbing. Michael Savage is a loyal American, and he is passionate about protecting America, which is why I enjoy listening to him. He speaks for most Americans when he criticizes people who apologize for our success and who will not protect our borders, our common language, and our American culture. If he were at the fringe of society, like the other people on the UK list, he would not have a nationally syndicated radio show, and he would not be the third most popular talk show host in America. I listen to Dr. Savage's radio show regularly, and I have never heard him encourage hatred or incite violence in anyone. The travel ban against Michael Savage demeans and diminishes Great Britain as a free and open society. The United Kingdom should immediately remove Dr. Savage's name from this list of criminals and terrorists, lift his travel ban, and grant him a visa to travel to Great Britain whenever he wishes. In the weeks ahead, I will be working with my colleagues in Congress to help protect Dr. Savage's First Amendment rights and his ability to travel freely to Great Britain. I urge you to press our British friends to remove him from the Home Secretary's list of banned individuals. Thank you for your prompt attention to this important matter. Sincerely, John Culbertson, Member of Congress. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, this is the first time anyone has intervened on my behalf other than my listeners, you know, without pay. In other words, sure, many, many people have wanted to help me for large fees, mainly liberal lawyers who are specialists in the First Amendment. But this gentleman did this for free because he believes in the truth, justice, and the American way. God bless John Culbertson, and let's hope to God the effects are positive. You can read this on michaelsavage.com under the headline, Congress Presses Hillary on Savage's Behalf. Also on michaelsavage.com is an article you should not miss by Wesley Pruden, Obama Bows and the Nation Cringes, and I agree with him 100%. As I said yesterday on my show, by bowing to the Japanese leader, this is the first head of state to have done this. It's astounding. It's the first head of state to have done this. This is a man, Obama, in genuflecting, where his forehead almost hit the floor with a nasty bump, in a way that no president before him has so abused custom, traditions, or protocol. In fact, the prime ministers of Israel, India, Slovenia, South Korea, Russia, and even Dick Cheney among them, have greeted Emperor Akihito with a friendly handshake and an ever so slight but respectful nod, and sometimes not even that. Why would Obama stun everyone like this? Why would he turn America into a doormat? Why is Obama running around the world apologizing for America's greatness? There's a psychological issue here
And you would think the thousands of psychiatrists in America would have been onto this by now. Something is wrong with this picture. Read the article because it's worth reading. This is a leftist who doesn't understand how embarrassing he has become for the United States of America. And that is also found up on michaelsavage.com. Here are some other headlines. Hassan sought war crimes prosecution of U.S. soldiers. Can you believe this? A decorated cigar-smoking Marine is running for Congress. China is questioning the course of U.S. health care reform. The Chinese themselves are worried about the impact of Obama's madness on the fiscal crisis that we have today. It seems the Chinese have more reason to worry than we do since they hold so many of our treasury notes. Good news, traitor lawyer goes to jail. That's the woman lawyer who looks like a football with hair. And then take a look at this one. Green speakers, Obama advisor, Pentagon bomber. You won't believe these people. What they have to do with the environment is nothing. It's pure Marxism. But they're all radicals, they're all leftists, and they all want to take over your life. Now they're using the green game to do so. And from the Wall Street Journal, FDIC is America's newest land baron. Congress is steaming over H1N1 vaccine shortage. Soldier mom nixes deployment to care for her baby. You hear this? New York Times, corrupt leaders allowed into the United States despite a law and a presidential decree. Several times a year, Teodoro Nguema Obiang arrives at the doorstep of the United States from his home in Africa on his way to his $35 million estate in Malibu. Is Buddhism pacifist? Read the article on michaelsavage.com. U.S. troops battle both Taliban and their own rules. It's an amazing article. You got to read it. Czech celebrate 20th anniversary of the fall of communism. Islamic militants are boosting their role in the drug trade. Amnesty supporters for illegal aliens assaulted Tea Party protesters. And go to michaelsavage.com to get your copy of Banned in Britain. Sure to be a collector's item. Those are the headlines for the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The threat of the Mexican or swine flu is all over the media. While the government pushes for mandated vaccines and emergency police powers, if there's an outbreak, it seems they can't get their story straight on just how bad this flu will be. There are many questions raised about the safety of both the seasonal and the swine flu vaccination shots. Joining us now with an exclusive update is Robert Scott Bell.
Michael, this week, the CDC appears more like Chicken Little than a scientific organization trying to protect the public from a so-called H1N1 pandemic that is most definitely not. I mean, all that's left for the CDC to do this week is just to declare all 300 million Americans have H1N1 and we're all going to die, or we're all already dead, and they'd still say we need the vaccine.
Play the clip.
I'm Dr. Tony Fiore. Flu is a serious contagious disease. Each year in the United States, on average, more than 200,000 people are hospitalized and 36,000 people die from seasonal flu-related complications. This flu season could be worse than recent years because there is a new and very different influenza virus causing illness called 2009 H1N1 flu. CDC expects both 2009 H1N1 flu and seasonal flu to cause illness, hospital stays, and deaths this season and is preparing for an early and possibly severe flu season. CDC recommends a three-step approach to fighting the flu: vaccination, everyday preventive actions, and the correct use of antiviral drugs. Vaccination is the best protection we have against influenza.
Throughout history, whenever we see a real pandemic, we'll always look and see an environmental disaster that is present, whether it be sewage running in the streets, people living in closed quarters, people have abject malnutrition, deficiency diseases. All of these things lead to the development of all kinds of bacterial and viral diseases, for which, again, are not evidence of a lack of a vaccine or the lack of a drug. And yet we have the CDC continuing to operate as if they are a marketing imperative and marketing arm for the vaccine industry. And this week we've got reports of more children being harmed by this. And I realize there are those in the audience that would say, well, okay, it's just the price that we've got to pay. Some people are going to have to sacrifice for the greater good. But I'm thinking about you moms and dads out there. What if it's your child, right? What if it's your child? We've got the story of a Virginia teenager now, another athlete, kind of like the 25-year-old Washington Redskins cheerleader we talked about a couple of weeks back. But this Virginia teen was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré, right? 1976. Gerald Ford, swine flu, pandemic concern, promotion of this shot. Loads of people died, 25 times the number than actually died of the swine flu then. Now we've got a kid with another Guillain-Barré case.
Oh, my God.
Now you tell me his mom and his dad are feeling really good about this idea that, well, just some of the kids are going to have to suffer to help everybody else.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
No, if it's your kid, it's 100%. Don't give me one in a million. This is not good. I'm a dad. I've got kids. No way. That's a good trade. In fact, when we realize that it's indeed the case that if kids do not get proper nutrition, they are likely to be immunocompromised. How hard is that to understand?
Exactly.
It's not that difficult. In the meantime, CDC, Chicken Little, the end of the world is near. But the truth is disease prevention and reversal must ultimately be accomplished by restoring nutritional integrity to the body. And that means removing the toxins that shouldn't be there. And there is no man-made vaccine or drug that can replace the essential elements that are embedded into the very fabric of creation. Only arrogant men would believe they can outdo creation. And I'm talking, again, nutrition. And even more importantly, Michael, the freedom to choose it. Because we're sitting on the precipice of Obama-Pelosi care, which institutionalizes this obscene monopoly that already exists for drug medicine, vaccine medicine, and no nutrition. No nutrition company can make a claim that it can actually prevent, treat, cure, mitigate a disease. Well, how did they get sick in the first place? Because they didn't have the right nutrition in their bodies. And then they were susceptible.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
And millions of Americans still not aware that their government stands in the way of knowing that nutrients, not drugs, are the legitimate way to prevent and reverse disease. And I have to say this again, for those that don't hear this message clearly enough, we are not standing here arguing that we should ban drugs and vaccines. It's not about being for or against them. It's about having the freedom to also know that there are other ways to go in prevention and or treatment of disease that may not be patented. It may not be approved by the FDA. But hey, what is the great shakes about FDA approval? Last week, we talked about the fact that 106,000 Americans are dying every year at the hands of approved medicine, synthetic pharmaceutical drugs by FDA. And you're going to say, well, what's the big deal, Robert? What's the big deal? It is a big deal. That's over 33 9/11s a year. And people are shrugging it as if it's, well, it's no big deal because the government has approved that. Well, this is the problem of Americans looking for their government to approve nutrition. That's insane. Nutrition predated government. And, of course, getting back to it is the basic way we can restore, some semblance of biological sanity instead of looking for a socialized nanny state system to be completely mandated from above by Pelosi and Obama. But I suppose that we've become so accustomed to living with a freedom deficiency disease that we've forgotten that the American system of government, so it's all government around the world, can only operate as long as it has the consent of the governed. And I'm asking your audience, do you consent to a pharmaceutical tyranny emanating from 10 miles square? You may be all for this thing. That's fine. But the freedom to say, nope, don't believe in it, don't want it for my kid. And then they blame you. Oh, because you spread it. And this is medical collectivism. That's what people don't understand. They're actually defending medical collectivism. You're not a human. You're cattle. We need to breed this so-called herd immunity. That's how we're all going to make it through. Instead of restoring nutritional integrity to everybody, they think by artificially stimulating antibodies in everybody and risking some of these kids to get Guillain-Barré, neurological issues. Some may even die. They admit this. Some may even die. But that's the price we got to pay. Because we're all a bunch of cattle.
How could this be going on?
Medical collectivist. Collectivism is evil. It's dangerous. It has no place in our government, least of all, even in the doctoring realm. You know, freedom does not come to those who wait for it. but it does. It exists right now for those courageous enough to live it. And that is the message here. Because it's fear that is inducing this belief that only government can solve this problem, whether it be the problem of a phony pandemic or whether it be the problem of the phony healthcare crisis. Because you cannot operate a functional system in a monopoly, and that's what we've had for so many decades here. And the Democrats are playing it to the hilt, claiming it's freedom that has done us in. We can't trust the free market. We can't trust the people to choose what's right for them. We've got to dictate, mandate it from above. And are you subject in that way to be a slave to government in such a way that they're going to direct to you what kind of doctor you can see? And you can bet it's not going to be nutritional. There is no place for nutrition in Pelosi Obamacare. And that's the whole thing. What is it? 90% of all disease can be traced back to the lack of certain vitamins, minerals, and trace minerals corrupting the enzymatic function, the endocrine function, the metabolic functions of the body. It's not that difficult to understand. The proper role here in health and healing is to restore nutritional integrity. And if that means that Big Pharma no longer has a monopoly, well, whoop-de-doo. If they're that good, they'll compete in the free market. They'll be fine. But if they feel like they need a monopoly, government to mandate what they do, then they're not worthy. Not worthy of the marketplace, because the people will reject that. Where is that love of liberty? And that's the love we're talking about here when we talk about vitamin L right here on the Savage Nation. And I appreciate the opportunity to relate that, because I don't want to see any more children harmed by these government mandates or fear tactics coming down from the Chicken Littles at the CDC. You want to keep up on this? Just keep checking in with the blog, robertscottbell.blogspot.com. Loads of podcast information that you won't get anywhere else except here on the Savage Nation. Appreciate that very much, Michael.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The media is trying to cover up Nidal Hassan's true intentions for the Fort Hood massacre. They're even trying to make him a victim of prejudice and saying he just snapped one day. We all know it was jihad. He screamed Allah Akbar before killing. Joining us now with his views on this is Dr. Peter Breggin.
Michael, you were among the very first to identify the Fort Hood shooter, Major Nidal Hassan, as a terrorist. So before I begin to look at his identity as a psychiatrist, I want to confirm that Hassan was driven by religious ideology. For years, he openly claimed that the war on terror is a war on Muslims. He announced on the internet and to his fellow soldiers that a Muslim suicide bomber should be praised for killing 100 soldiers. One wonders how and why the Army failed to relieve him from active duty. One ridiculous explanation is that they had a lot invested in him, his complete medical and psychiatric training. Much more likely, the Army was hamstrung by the leftist political correctness that's been imposed upon it. Let's also see through another leftist smokescreen, that Hassan was more a crazy person than a terrorist. During the American Revolution, Samuel Adams pointed out that he'd never seen a man commit treason without first losing his moral footing and his personal life. As for being a victim of prejudice and harassment, Hassan was instead a provocateur whom the Army tried to ignore. Hassan is not only a terrorist, he's a traitor, a man who turned on his nation, on the Army that nurtured, educated, and paid him a six-figure salary, and on his comrades in arms.
Are you surprised he is a psychiatrist?
Not surprised at all, Michael. According to the media, poor Hassan was driven to the breaking point by the stress of counseling returning soldiers and having to listen to their horrific stories. Totally false. Modern psychiatrists are not trained to listen or to counsel their patients. I've given seminars to the staff at both hospitals where Hassan was trained, Walter Reed in Washington, D.C., and the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. They were only interested in biological theories and drugs. Modern psychiatry is not about counseling and empowering people. It's about controlling and suppressing them, and that's a dismal affair for patients and doctors alike. The armed forces have been taken in by the false claims of modern psychiatry. By contrast, Michael, it's not depressing to do psychotherapy or counseling. As therapists, it's inspiring when people entrust their feelings and their life stories to us. Therapists don't burn out when they show concern and empathy for their patients and when they help them to find the strength and direction to reclaim their lives. But being an ordinary psychiatrist is deadly. No wonder my colleagues have such high suicide and drug addiction rates. Before Hassan became a murderer, he was already a toxic agent, stifling the morale of his patients by empathizing with their enemies, the people who had wounded and injured them rather than with them. The Army needs to investigate the evil impact that this man must have had on the hundreds of soldiers he discouraged and drugged. He probably made his own personal contribution to the rising suicide rate among soldiers. The most recent data on drugs show that the soldiers are being snowed under not only with antidepressants and tranquilizers, but also increasingly with antipsychotic drugs like Risperdal, Zyprexa, Geodone, and Seroquel. To cover up their own therapeutic impotence, psychiatrists chemically suppress our troops and push them back onto the front lines. That's the kind of poisonous psychiatry that Hassan was practicing in combination with his poisonous ideology. It was not only bad for him, it was bad for our soldiers, bad for our army, and bad for our nation.
Isn't it true that some psychiatrists self-medicate?
Yes, they do, Michael. They self-medicate all the time. They simply don't know anything different. The odds are that Dr. Hassan was taking antidepressants and tranquilizers on his own. They were probably causing increasing disinhibition, at least in these wild pronouncements he was making, until his final Allah Akbar before he began shooting. In my book, Medication Madness, I describe dozens of cases like this. Psychiatric drugs can further agitate someone like Hassan, who was already ideologically and psychologically primed to explode in violence.
Do you think Hassan's psychiatric colleagues failed to respond to his violent pronouncements and obvious mental instability?
I asked that same question of Dr. Bart Billings, the founder and director of the premier International Combat Stress Conference, where I spoke last year. Dr. Billings, a retired colonel, confirms that Army psychiatrists are nothing more than pill pushers who have no idea how to evaluate anyone's mental condition, including one of their own. And he also agrees that it's disastrous to prescribe agitating psychiatric drugs to active duty soldiers. I want to conclude with a few thoughts. First, Major Hassan is a domestic terrorist and a traitor. Second, he is a madman, but that doesn't contradict his identity as a terrorist and a traitor. Third, there's nothing incompatible about being a psychiatrist and being a violent person. Modern psychiatry is a suppressive profession whose values are alien to the liberty and responsibility advocated by our founders and upheld by our armed services. It's time for the Army to reject the false premises and damaging effects of modern psychiatry and to focus on psychological, educational, and moral approaches that genuinely help soldiers to prepare for and to overcome the effects of combat stress. You can find my book and download all my Savage Nation reports on my website, www.bregin.com. That's BREGGIN.com.
Thanks for the insight, Dr. Bregin. I'm a student of history, number one. The British got defeated in Afghanistan. We haven't learned from that experience. Do you remember the Russian military fought in Afghanistan? Do you remember how powerful the USSR was at the time? Do you have any recollection of the kind of weaponry they were able to bring onto that battlefield? Do you remember the images of those helicopters coming over a mountain pass? Maybe you saw them in movies. Now, you were an Afghani Taliban fighting against them. What would you feel? They were brave enough to stand up with, by the way, Stinger missiles given to them by the United States military. I should say the United States government gave the very men we're fighting now Stinger missiles to shoot down Russian helicopters. Well, today the Afghanis don't need American aid. They've got it from many, many other sources. Iran primarily, probably Russia. I'm not so sure. I don't know where they're getting their weapons. And so therefore I ask you, not only from the point of view strategically, can we win, but should we be there? Strategically, I don't know how we can win there. Where's the enemy? Who is the enemy? Who was the enemy in Afghanistan? First, let's define terms. We knew who the enemy was when the men were fighting against the Germans. Let's start with the obvious. It was the fascist Nazi party. They were identifiable. They were on a quest to rule the world and impose the Nazi ideology throughout the world. So when the men were fighting, although they were scared to death like every man who fights in war is, at least they knew what they were fighting for and who the enemy was. Can you say with any certainty that you know who the enemy is in Afghanistan and why we're fighting there? If you can, please help me understand it, because I don't. I don't know who the enemy is. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The only real news today is that Congress is finally pressing Hillary Clinton and the State Department to get me off the list of murderers and terrorists who have been banned by Britain. Representative John Culberson of Texas has stepped forward for the cause of free speech and sent a letter to the State Department on my behalf. He urges that I be allowed to travel to England. We were speaking with Culberson on the show earlier, and he told me why he had to do this.
You're living in San Francisco. You're a conservative. You believe in the Constitution. And, hey, you know, what kind of representation are you going to get out of San Francisco? So we're proud to have you as an honorary Texan, Michael. And I'm glad to help you, my friend. You deserve it. It's the right thing to do, and my rule always has been, you do the right thing for the right reasons, and good things happen.
And here's what he had to say about freedom of speech.
You have been wrong. You are, like, as any other American, you have the absolute right to travel to England or any other nation, just as any other law-abiding American would. Certainly your First Amendment rights as an American, your freedom of speech has been curtailed. You have business interests in London. And as you know, Michael, I am handling this not only as, in my official capacity, I'm helping you as with the State Department, but I'm handling my office, Michael, is handling this as constituent casework. We are pursuing your case to get a visa issued to Michael Savage to travel to England at any time for any reason. And I think that she could, anyone looking at this, sees the obvious injustice of denying a law-abiding American the right to travel to England. But, Michael, above and beyond that, I find it deeply offensive that they put you on a list with terrorists and criminals and murderers. It's outrageous, it's offensive, and it really demeans England. It diminishes that great country for them to attack you in this way, to list you with these people. And, frankly, it's the right thing to do, and we need you speaking out loud and clear. This is a decisive moment for America, Michael, and you're a warrior to protect our borders, our language, our culture, and our Constitution, my friend.
And here's another incredible point the congressman made.
What they do to you in England, Michael, they can do to anyone in the media. Anyone who speaks up and out is threatened by what England has done to you. So we all have an interest in protecting your right to speak, no matter whether you agree or disagree with your position. I enjoy your show. I'm a fan. Listen to the Savage Nation regularly. And I just have been outraged by the way the British government treated you and just stepped up to help you. I am sure we'll get a bunch of colleagues on board to help with this, Michael, because it's the right thing to do. We truly, Michael, are at a decisive moment, as you have said many times on the show, which is why I like to listen to you. You speak common sense from the heart. You speak about and defend American values that made us great, and we will either become a bankrupt Argentina, third world nation, whose debt won't be bought by anybody else with a worthless dollar, or we will return to what made America great, our core principles, our Constitution, and put the federal government back in their box and defend our language, our borders, and our culture that made America what it is, and welcome any and everyone from all over the world. Come and join us, but you will learn English, and you'll become an American, and you work hard like our forefathers did. And, Michael, you embody that. You speak for all of us who are fed up with a federal government that's out of control, and this liberal Congress, your congresswoman, and this president are going to drive America over a financial cliff. And, Michael, we need you out there speaking up for the Constitution and our freedoms. And in Texas, that's what it's all about. Our most important right in Texas for all Americans, leave me alone.
He also mentions how he felt about no other public official having taken up my cause.
You've got some good conservatives there in California, in your valley. I often hear that you have almost two states in California. You've got a lot of good conservatives out there in the California delegation. Elton Gallagher, you've got a lot of good guys out there. But, Michael, we're proud to, I'm proud to help you in Texas. I just happen to be the first guy to contact you. There's others out there. I know we'll have other colleagues help. There's a lot of fine conservative members of Congress that honor the Constitution, that want to protect this great nation and put the federal government back in their box and get the government out of our lives.
God bless you, John Culberson, member of Congress, and thank you for being on the Savage Nation. A Sicilian mother took away her 61-year-old son's house keys, cut off his allowance, and hauled him to the police station because he stayed out too late. Tired of her son's misbehavior, the pensioner in the central Sicilian city of Caltagirone turned to the police to convince this blockhead to behave properly. La Sicilia, one of Sicily's leading newspapers, reported. The son responded by saying his mother did not give him a big enough weekly allowance and did not know how to cook. He's 61 years old. Police helped the squabbling duo make up, and the two returned home together with the son's house keys and daily allowance restored. Most Italian men still live at home late into their 30s, enjoying their mama's cooking, washing, and ironing. And that's why the churches are emptying out and the mosques are filling up, and why in 50 years you will not be eating spaghetti and spaghetti in Italy, you'll be eating couscous. They're not having children, and it's any different here? Let's look at here. This has nothing to do with Obama. This has to do with the ruling elite. This goes back a long time. I would say it got the disease really metastasized under Bill Clinton. The deceitful Bill Clinton, who sold us down the river with NAFTA, who exported factories to China when we were screaming, stop it. Remember those days? I've been at this a long time. I'm reading Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Sun Tzu, some of you know who it is. If you've been in the military and you have a brain, you read Sun Tzu rather than watching porn on your computer. You look up Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Sun Tzu, as you well know, was a great military planner, and it was originally intended as a set of principles that were designed to maximize the chances for military victory and national survival and minimize the chances of military defeat and human loss. Okay, that was Sun Tzu. It was written many thousands of years ago. And he had philosophy about warfare. And in his philosophy, in his general principles, he said, subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. In other words, he who defeats an enemy without firing a shot, that's the real warrior. So now look at what's going on in our country today. We have the most powerful military on earth that cannot fire a shot when it comes to North Korea or Iran. We have ships armed to the gills. Armed to the gills with the latest technology, they could fire missiles from thousands of miles away. Submarines that prowl the earth that may as well be beached and turned into birthing clinics for the 20% of the crew that goes into the Navy to have babies at government expense with a uniform and three hot meals and a baby that's a dependent of the U.S. military. You think I'm making it up? Did you know it? Because of the feminists who pushed women into active duty combat positions, do you know that 20% of all personnel at sea are in pregnancy at any, let's say, not able to perform at any one time, whether they're pregnant, about to have a baby, or just had a baby? 20% as a result of Patricia Schroeder, who started the assault on the U.S. Navy. I know the facts. You can't argue with the facts. You can make it up that I'm making this stuff up. But I know the facts. I got all of the facts. So Sun Tzu wrote, whenever possible, victory should be achieved through diplomatic coercion, thwarting the enemy's plans and alliances and frustrating his strategy. So right now, Russia has achieved victory over America. How? By coercing Hillary Clinton and Obama, and by thwarting America's plans and alliances and frustrating America's strategy, because Putin's 25,000 times smarter than the whole pack of them put together. So from his point of view, of nationalism, his job is to achieve victory over America. He understands Sun Tzu. He's smarter than the schmucks we have running things, most of whom have never fired a Daisy BB gun. They're now running the country. Preserving the military and not using them in a war is absolutely the highest ideal of a military strategy. Planning and the formulation of an overall strategy before commencing a campaign is more important than unleashing the military. George Bush was an example of the biggest idiot in the history of running the military. He had no long-term strategy, but he ran the boys out there and he took away the military too soon, for example. And if any of the Marines did their job a little too well, he actually court-martialed them. According to a new story that came out, this is a shocker. 10% of U.S. mosques preach hatred and jihad, according to an FBI agent who spoke to Ronald Kessler of Newsmax. Imams preach jihad and extremism in 10% of the 2,000 mosques in the U.S., the FBI estimates. But you won't read that in the New York Times. Because if we condemn the radical Muslims, we're accused of being racist, and that's why we're losing the war against radical Islam. It gets worse, though. It gets even worse. According to the Liberal Pew Research Center, a quarter of Muslims in America, a quarter of Muslims in America ages 18 through 29 believe that suicide bombings can be justified. Now, who is putting this in the heads of the young Muslims? It's the imams who preach hate and jihad in American mosques and by their postings on the internet, not according to Michael Savage, but according to the FBI counterterrorism officials who the author of this article interviewed, Ronald Kessler. Did you hear this? An FBI official says off the books, those who actively support extremist causes, say America is evil and deserves what it gets and celebrate the death of soldiers, know they may come to our attention, so they don't do it as openly now. But they do it. They do it in mosques. They do it in mosques. And we sit here like sitting ducks. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please? With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.